Emergency Council, and I want to welcome you to this Green Talk, a series of recorded conversations that the Northwest Energy Efficiency Council is holding with thought leaders in the energy efficiency industry. And I'm very pleased to welcome our very first guest to Green Talk, Ash Awad, who's the Vice President of Energy and Facility Services for the McKinstry Company. And the board president for the Northwest Energy Efficiency Council. So welcome, Ash. Thanks very much.
Good. Yeah, glad to be here.
Well, I want to ask you a series of questions and just get your reflections on some issues that I think are really important to the industry. But I want to start out really on maybe a more specific note. McKinstry has an impressive array of design, build, operate, and maintain services that you offer your customers. And I've always been intrigued by the tagline that McKinstry uses, for the life of your building. And as the leader of the Energy Services Division, how does this idea, for the life of your building, define what you do within McKinstry?
Yeah, well, it's actually, you know, both the tagline and the way we consistently think about everything that we do at McKinstry, mostly based on the idea that buildings are, you know, living and breathing at both, I guess, figuratively and literally, and that, you know, they start off and go through different kind of cycles through their life. So, for instance, you know, whether it's a brand new building that starts from a plan and then design, then build process, or a building that's going to be renovated and goes through kind of a change, some minor, some dramatic, there is this kind of monumental thing that happens that isn't just the effective change in the structure, or change in the building or the building systems. It's actually what happens as the building serves its purpose to support the mission of an entity, whether it's a school district or a university or a hospital in the environment of care. So when I think of the, you know, the life of your building tagline, I think that could not be more properly aligned with the energy efficiency and ongoing sustainability view that we have at McKinstry. In that efficiency isn't just simply a thing you design or a thing you build, it's really about how things operate, how they live and breathe, both in the operation, the occupancy of a building, and those things change over time and require additional care and attention, change out. And so when I think of For the Life of Your Building, that tagline, it really is the epitome of the integrated delivery that McKinstry stands for, but in particular when it comes to efficiency, efficacy of a building, it's perfectly aligned with the future view of a building, the changes that happen, and then how they must operate, live, and breathe after we do the change. That's why it's so perfectly aligned with the way I think and the way we think about energy efficiency.
That's great. I love the dynamic nature that you capture with just a short phrase there, and I agree that it's a perfect fit, I think, for the way we need to think about energy efficiency in buildings. Well, I want to go from that sort of general thing to talking more specifically about a particular project that you're involved with right now, the Stone 34 building. This is a McKinstry project where you're using a host of different innovative equipment and design features. And I hope you could tell us just a little bit about that building.
Well, yeah, I think just to kind of start with some broad notions about this building, this is a building that's going to host major tenant, and this building was actually primarily built for Brooks Sports. And Brooks creates, premium athletic wear, particularly premium running sneakers. And Skanska Development approached the CEO of Brooks. Brooks was located in tenant space up in Bothell, really wanted to continue to kind of create a brand and a presence in Seattle. So they decided to kind of create their world headquarters right in Seattle. Skanska approached them with an idea about locating and building a building from the ground up, particularly in a place in Seattle where some of the best running and some of the best trail systems connect. And so therefore, you know, the idea of actually developing and building a building for Brooks, who's been remarkably innovative around the athletic and the apparel lines, I think that's where it starts. Now, from there, I think the idea of actually coming together to build a building, both plan, design, build, and then really think for the life of your building to think about how the building's going to operate, that's where things got to be a bit different. In other words, this building could have been built as any typical 120,000 square foot, you know, 3-4 story building in Seattle. But what the Skanska team did, and the team that Skanska assembled to include McKinstry and other really good engineering partners did, was to really set out a challenge to create a building that meets most all of the living building challenges and have a building that consumes 75% less energy and water. It actually captures about 50% of the rainwater that falls, stores it for reuse. And when you set up something like that type of challenge, you can do it by designing the right systems. You can even build the right systems. But what's vastly different about this particular project is that not only was the right technology, innovative technology like chilled beams and dedicated outdoor heat recovery systems put together, along with tenant features, like, for instance, in the lobby, there happens to be a sculpture that Skanska commissioned that actually demonstrates through this really living kinetic sculpture of flowers whether or not the building is actually performing efficiently or not. As a side note, when it's performing efficiently, the sculpture blooms, and when it's not, it wilts. And so therefore, they're getting the tenants engaged in what they can do to make sure that the building is efficient. But moreover, what the Skanska team did with direct support from McKinstry is we actually came together and made a commitment to measure and verify the energy performance of this building over the next 3 years. In other words, we didn't just come together with an innovator and an innovative entity like Brooks and an innovative entity like Skanska and then set up aspirations around what could happen, design possibilities, build potential, and then walk away. What you're seeing here with Stone 34 is a direct and intimate connection between as designed, as built, as operated, and as occupied. Well, where all partners are really together trying to get to the outcome of how can we get the building to perform efficiently, not just aspire to be efficient. And I think that's a really wonderful story. And I think projects like Stone 34 are just the start. The federal government did a number of projects like this over the last several years. Universities like Washington State University are embarking on a project like this. The state of Washington is embarking on a performance-based design build project as well. So I think this is a trend, and I think it's a really healthy trend for the industry and then obviously for the owners and occupiers of these buildings.
Well, this is certainly from the pictures here a very attractive looking building, and I love the idea of energy dashboard as art. In the lobby, what a great and innovative idea!
Isn't that
neat? I want to follow up a little bit with that, Ash, if I can. The lawyers in the room would probably accuse me of a leading question here, but based on how you approach buildings at McKinstry, and particularly in this particular project and others. Reflecting more generally now on the industry, we've had a history in the energy efficiency field of separating equipment, the energy-using equipment in the buildings, and operations. And in your view, has that had the effect of underperforming the potential of the resource? And if so, how do we as an industry move to a more integrated and durable future?
Well, it's a great question, because I actually think that it really is, part of the conundrum that we face. And I think if I looked back, over a couple of decades, I would say that the prescriptive notion, for instance, of more energy efficient lights, in other words, incandescent bulbs that consumed 60 or 100 watts being replaced with fluorescent bulbs that actually consumed significantly less, sometimes as low as 15 to 17 watts, depending on the application. I think the idea that the efficiency was built into the equipment, the product, made some good sense. In other words, you take out a 100-watt light bulb, you replace it with a 27-watt light bulb, you turn them on at the same time for the same amount of time, and therein lies the efficiency. And I think what that did, both from an end-user perspective that thought to build efficiency, and from a utility perspective that thought to incent efficiency along with codes, it made everybody think prescriptively, single measure, using the term cream skimming. In other words, you know, if you could do something quick and easy and it would yield direct results, why not? The challenge is that the persistence of energy saved is a thing that now we need to look at. The first epoch of energy efficiency was to get people to be aware that there were more efficient systems and technology to be deployed in the built environment. And I think we have accomplished that, and we might have accomplished that a decade ago. People understood the benefit of efficient systems and equipment. In other words, whether that's in a commercial office building that has a lighting retrofit done in it, or some other technical, tactical things, or at your own home where you're actually buying Energy Star appliances, that set of ideas around buying systems that will consume less energy simply because the wattage is less, that I think we're there. Now the question really is, what do we do from here? And your question specifically is, are we underperforming the potential of the resource? And the general answer is absolutely. And here's the real way to think about this. When we think prescriptively, when we think products and parts and not whole building, not the totality of how something is going to operate over time, then what happens is we make small decisions, we make incremental decisions, and we then believe that if we've replaced all the chillers in the world, which is not the truth, or all the lights in the world with more efficient lights, which is not necessarily the truth, but we can very quickly get to that place if we think prescriptively. In other words, we think that just because we put in a 7-day programmable thermostat, it must be more efficient. The challenge is that if we don't actually program the 7-day programmable thermostat, then we get no efficiency out of it. And so that's a long way of just saying that what we really have to focus on is the entire ecosystem of the built environment, both the technology that is designed and the systems view of what is going to get deployed, and then the benefit of how then do we operate, and we've got to change our mind. There's going to be a shift here from thinking about just the capital deployed to the actual return on that capital and asset. And what that simply means is, and I just use the Stone 34 project as an example, if we say that a system can perform and reduce the energy prescriptively by some level, the question is, can we look at multiple systems coming together with the occupants and the operators and really making substantive changes in the built environment and going from lights that might save energy at 10 or 15% to complete holistic changes plus occupant engagement and operator engagement, collectively working to save 50%. And to do that, our energy codes are going to have to be different. The utilities are going to have to think outcome-based, and we're going to have to get more and more owners to think beyond just the first capital dollars that they deploy. That's the shift that has to happen. As that shift happens, I think we're going to get to a place where the built environment at minimum is going to consume wildly less energy, and I think we're going to create a really robust industry focused on energy productivity that not only makes buildings more efficient, but also creates jobs that aren't even thought of today and creates industry and business at scale that I think will be good for a variety of different business reasons, but in particular good for the idea that we're actually being more mindful of the resources that we use and we're not wasting resources where we don't need to. In other words, we're plugging them back into the growth of business, the growth of economy, the growth of industry, which is exactly what we in America should be doing. So sorry about the long answer, but it's a point of passion for me, Stan, and so thank you for asking the question.
Not a long answer at all, but a very good one. I want to actually focus a little bit now on the kind of customer side of this. Energy efficiency, of course, is at its essence the absence of something. And it's the energy, of course, that the customer would have otherwise used without having the kind of efficiency product or action or some combination of those in place. How do we prove to the customers that energy efficiency is real and that they're actually getting, you know, what's oftentimes been described as the lunch you get paid to eat?
Yeah, it's quite a dilemma. I mean, I think that there's a really neat answer that has emerged over some time now. But, you know, it really is a dilemma, and the dilemma comes from really two particular areas. The first area, again, I guess depending on who would be listening to this audio interview, I think it's for us that are in the industry to be mindful of the idea that part of the challenge the industry has faced is that as an industry, and I don't mean a particular sect of the industry, I mean just in general, at times we have been accused by end user clients of selling them something, for instance, an energy efficient project, solution, technology, that actually hasn't yielded the benefit that they expected. Now, it's very complex relative to sometimes if you sell a particular product and the client isn't really operating that product properly, then you get why maybe they're not seeing the benefit. But I think it's incumbent upon us as at least the first prong to make sure that whatever we are stating as the benefits of a solution, a product, a technology is real, and that we explain to the owner their responsibility in ensuring that whatever they are buying actually yields the benefit that we all expect collectively, and that we have to be careful to not oversell savings. For instance, you know, if something is supposed to save and have a 8-year payback, we should be very careful to not press the idea that in its most optimal path, it's only going to have a 2-year payback and have the client be very disappointed because they just didn't quite get the return based on the investment they made. That's incumbent upon us as an industry. We've got to be very careful to not oversell the potential and make sure clients are clearly aware of what they're buying. The second item, though, is when we are actually working to help validate the efficiency delivered, the real savings, we also should be using protocols and approaches that are really accepted and that could be validated by others. For instance, at McKinstry, we exclusively use the international IPMVP protocol, third-party measure and verify protocol, and we very specifically have a conversation with clients around the protocol, how it's going to work, what points of measurement we're going to take, what they're responsible to do, how then all of that gets calculated, not in a black box, but in an open format. And if there's ever a disagreement around the energy savings, then they have the right and the opportunity to pull in a third party, and that third party should be able to follow the same protocol in an open book fashion, third party, and be able to look at it and either validate, tell us we're wrong, or share with the client where they may be missing it and why the savings are actually there. But I think in the past, when it was all black box, in other words, when it was just look at your utility bill, it should be in there. And if the weather was hotter or colder, or the occupancy was more or less, it was very difficult for a client to really ultimately figure out, wait a minute, was I sold a bill of goods, and how do I actually unravel whether the savings are here or not? So our job as an industry is to make sure that we take great care in not overselling, and great care in being very clear about the process that we and the end user should go through to validate the savings. If we do that as an industry, it'll become standard, normal. It'll be the thing that people believe, not just the lunch they get paid to eat. And the most important thing right now is we have got to get to a place where the reality of energy savings is measured, verified, validated, and real. We've got to get to a place where it's no longer a question of whether the savings, it's just really a matter of time and the work that we do to ensure that the savings are there. That's the industry has to do that, Stan. So I hope that addresses the question.
Yeah, thank you. And thanks so much for your time today, Ash. It's been a great conversation, but I do want to ask one sort of concluding question, if I may. Can you give us what you believe are the biggest opportunities and challenges that you see facing the energy efficiency industry today?
Well, I think that the opportunities are in line with, I think, maybe some of the questions you asked. So, I think the opportunity is to move efficiency from just products and technologies into what's actually happening and how buildings are actually performing. I think that may give utilities more opportunity to fund more efficiency, particularly if they're better assured that it is part of the mix that they can count on. I think it gives owners the opportunity to really count on it as part of the return on investment proposition. So the more that we do to demonstrate that efficiency is living and breathing and real and something that can be measured and verified and validated, I think that is really pretty critical. I think with that comes things like, for instance, disclosure ordinances where buildings get a miles per gallon or EUI public disclosure of how the building is operating. I think it gives us codes that are really performance-based. I think it allows us to think differently maybe in the future, maybe near term, about financing and how products get financed. So I think the opportunity is to continue to demonstrate the long-term benefit of energy efficiency, and I think with that comes many, many different ways of looking at the sub-opportunities that get generated from there. I think the challenge that we will face is that, interestingly enough, I think energy efficiency is either viewed as something that is just naturally happening, and why do we have to spend more time thinking about it, and isn't everybody buying CFLs or LEDs, or doesn't everybody buy an Energy Star washer, and why do we have to push harder on this particular topic of efficiency? It's just happening. And the answer is, well, 82 billion square feet of existing non-residential consuming 77% of the electricity owned in a variety of different ways between investors and institutional schools and hospitals. And we're not going to replace 82 billion square feet of non-residential in the United States anytime soon. So the reality is a lot of good things are happening, but unless we really get to doing and keeping the focus on efficiency, taking the waste out, unless we focus on that, I think what will happen is the challenge potentially will be, well, energy codes are taking care of it, the utilities are funding it, products are being made, so therefore it's done, it's over, it's happening. And the reality is that in many ways the challenge is that we have just begun. And the future and the journey ahead is both laden with lots of opportunities, but still quite a few challenges. And I think, as an industry, particularly, I'm very proud of being on the NEEC board, very proud of what NEEC does for its membership. And I think as an industry, independent of whether we are partnered or competitors, we have to work together cohesively as a coalition, just like other entities do, to really make sure that we demonstrate the benefit of the opportunity and work really hard to be collectively focused on overcoming the challenge and not try to fracture the way we collectively will take down challenges and build on opportunities. So, I'm excited. I love this industry. I love everything about it. I expect to be in this industry for the rest of my career. And I'm really young, so I plan on doing this for a long time. So, Stan, thanks so much for your questions, and I'm very proud of NEEC, and I'm so pleased to be part of your team. Thank you.
Well, thank you for taking the time today. It was really articulate, well-spoken, and I think thought-provoking, which is exactly the point that we want to do in Green Talk. So thanks for your time today, Ash. We appreciate it very much.
Okay. Thanks, Dan. Take care.